Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we're joined by Kyle, our president and CEO, Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our director of cybersecurity. It's been a while since we've had so many people on the podcast. That's exciting. I think maybe a couple weeks ago, I asked, we're getting towards the end of the year, is there anything that we really need to cover? And multiple people brought up network access control. So I'd like to start maybe with Kyle. Why is this topic so important right now? Why are we talking about this today?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about zero trust a lot. And again, it definitely falls into the framework side, but the end benefit result is truly knowing what you have in your network and controlling what actually comes onto your network and giving you the ability to do that. And you have all these physical networks. Why there's still remote users on the other sides of it. We all, predominantly most organizations, still have physical infrastructure they're trying to protect side. And ultimately, you need to know what you have. And it can be a little unwieldy since so many things are network connected. And having something that can give you the ability to say, this device is trusted, and if someone else comes in, I want to have it authorized before it accesses the network, or I want to have it up to our security standards. Does it have current, you know, EDR/AV? Is it fully patched? Is it a corporate device? If it meets those criteria, then it's allowed. If not, it's going to go into isolation until it can be vetted and approved. You know, that's at the very high level, but it's getting that level of control and insight to the network is a huge part of that zero trust infrastructure and giving you those overall controls.
Yes, and it's right. I think I was trying to come up with a real easy, clean, what is network access control? And my overview was, it's the process of restricting unauthorized access to the network, users, devices, et cetera. And so Kyle kind of went through that pretty well and pretty thoroughly. It can get pretty complex, but I know today we're not going to get super too far into the weeds. But I thought that was a good start.
Yeah, I'd also just say making sure that they're on the proper networks as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, not just is it approved or not, it's is it approved in the right area? So I'll just go pick a couple examples. When CAT first rolled this out, we found old cameras that we used to use. We've moved on to a different camera system. And when someone was doing a switching upgrade, they plugged the cables back in, the cameras came back online, right? Things like that where it's just, it helps you, number one, clean up your environment that maybe you didn't fully finish. But then two is just making sure that, let's say you have a dedicated IoT network, right, for the smart TVs, that type of stuff. Should it be on your internal network with the servers or, you know, the printers or anything like that? Probably not. And so unless, like, if you've already authorized the device to be on your network, but it's classified as IoT, keep it on the IoT network, right? And so if it ever tries to cross the boundary into your trusted internal network, make sure it's prevented, essentially.
Yeah, that ability to identify the proper segmentation of it, of the network, is a critical delivery of that. And obviously, when you go deep in the deep dive side, you can get into micro-segmentation and other stuff that these products can deliver on. But, I mean, that's a very valid point, Nate, I think. You know, and that's definitely the immediate value you almost see out of the gate. As soon as you get a network access control solution deployed, it basically gives you an overall, you know, summary. Before you even do an enforcement, it gives you visualization of what is on your network. And just from that information alone is very enlightening to what Nate said of just risk mitigation, because you just don't realize some of these things that are actually connected to your network. And you can have the ability to say, what is this and why is it here? And do we still need this side of it? Because it's not going to light up anything generally side of it, but it becomes very illuminating and to asking those questions. And you can reduce your risk just initially very quickly by identifying and saying, why is this here? Rogue switches that get plugged in. Somebody needed an extra network port, so they threw in a low-end switch in an office somewhere. Well, you didn't know what. You don't know those are there necessarily, but, you know, these kind of devices will show you those things to say it is there. And those are the unknowns are what creates risk, you know, tremendously. And if you can get rid of that, that's a huge win.
Yeah, kind of tailing off of that real briefly, I mean, we're kind of getting into why do you need a network access control in general, which is great. One of the things that Kyle just highlighted there kind of brought to the front of my attention is as you're starting to look at having third parties or contractors come into your building, even someone that's just a sales individual, one of the first things they ask is, can I have access to your wireless? And this would be another way where you have the ability to, we started to get into segment. I guess I wanted to touch on that real briefly too, is segments are different portions of your network where you've decided what's safe and where it isn't, if you will. So we talked about an IoT network. We talk about guest networks. Those would be different types of segmentation. Everybody probably reckons back to the Target hack, and that's probably the easiest one for me to give the illustration of. The HVAC was on the same portion of the network that the point of sale system was, and that was why they had a problem. That no longer happens. Organizations go out of their way to make sure that those are on different segments of the network. But kind of following up and closing the loop on that, really the intent here would be as you're building out your network and your control, you want to make sure your guests, your contractors are on the appropriate networks as well. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that they just automatically go into there, which is where the tools are really coming into play is once you get them set up and configured, they will help you with the automation of those processes.
I have to give a little example just about the letting contractors or, you know, vendors on your environment is in the past CIT, we did have one of our vendors come on site with one of their laptops for a sales training. And we detected malware beaconing out on their device on our network. Again, it was on an untrusted environment, but it does happen. And we just had to reach out to them and say, hey, by the way, did you know that you likely have malware on your environment? On your laptop, please never touch it to our network again.
So help me.
Yeah. I will find that device.
I love it. That's so great. You know, we started talking a little bit about benefits. There's some, you know, assessment of your network and then mitigating that risk. And I'd love to go a little bit more on the benefits, but something I can't stop thinking about is why our company's not doing this. I mean, is it just follow through? Is it just lack of resources? It seems like a simple thing. Maybe it's not, but why would businesses not have this implemented already?
Ask if there's any technical people on this podcast listening right now. I'll just ask you, how hard is 802.1x to implement? You've probably just given up on the project or are a little bit grayer these days. So it is not an easy deployment.
That's a heavy lift.
Yeah, it is.
I was going to say, the other reason why you don't typically see it is it's not where people start. You tend to start at lower levels and you start to build out your maturity. This does fall into a slightly higher maturity, but it doesn't have to. It is a great tool. It's great functionality. And again, we'll get into benefits a little bit later. But when you start to have partners or people that do have the wherewithal, it doesn't have to be that. It is a big lift. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot that goes into it, but there is a way forward on it as well.
Yeah. And that's just to piggyback off Todd on that. There's newer solutions out there that are addressing the complexity of problems that Dave is referring to. But historically, that has been the big challenge. One has been the complexity side of it, and the other side, because of the complexity, the cost of the overall solution side of it. And unless you're in a regulated, you know, heavily regulated side of it, it's usually just been that requirement. But like everything else in technology, things have progressed and things have become, you know, ways to address those challenges are being resolved. And there's ways to accomplish it now that have greatly reduced the cost as well as made the complexity and deployment much, much simpler. Why not easy, simpler? You know, and to Todd's point, the general approach I think that we would always recommend customers to take is to do it in a phased approach. Like I said, even just to get, you know, the initial deployment and the discovery of what you have, and then moving it into enforcement, where you start to then enforce things within your network, and then move into micro segmentation and other ways to tighten down the overall security, you know, in a slow fashion. And it's not just tomorrow everything's knocked off and we're going to figure it out. You can be much more methodical, and it makes it much more digestible, both from a cost as well as a disruption to your business as you're trying to to adapt these more advanced controls.
Yeah, I'll again, I promise I won't go super technical on this, but for the like that 802.1x that I had mentioned before, again, it doesn't matter what it means, but for this podcast, but when you're typically doing those deployments, you're having to go in, take a look at the hardware of your switches, access points, you know, all that type of stuff to see, is it going to work together? And, you know, maybe there's potential hardware changes that had to go into those in the past, which only increases the cost. Maybe you just swapped out a new switch and now you have to re-swap it out again. There's also other considerations such as downtime, right? In order to configure the switches and access points, you had to bring them down to be able to do those configurations. And then you have other solutions that sit in line with the network traffic that, again, if the IT admin does something wrong, it brings down the entire network, right? So I know Kyle had mentioned the, you know, great, let's change everything in one day. Maybe sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not, right? And so the modern solutions that we see out today, they incorporate, you know, various sensors to, you know, maintain the traffic, see what's already out there with the network configurations. You get a far better picture of what your environment looks like before you enforce those policies. And then also there's things like agents that get loaded onto workstations. So maybe a device is off the network and they're working remote and they come in once a month, right? Well, in a traditional solution, when that person comes onto the network, they're disconnected until you approve it. But with a lot of those ones, because it's already pre-integrated on their machine, by the time that they come in, it auto-negotiates the connection. So there's a lot of really cool things that you can do with the modern solutions.
I was going to ask, you know, you're talking about remote work, and I know that bringing your own device is can be kind of popular. Are those big challenges when implementing this network access control?
No, not in the, well, again, it can solve for those and the ability to say, based on this device, and say, does it meet this criteria when it connects to the network? And if, again, if it is not a corporate owned device side of it, you can do, you know, micro segmentation to say it has access, but only to this. You have internet access and that's it. You can't access internal resources, or you can get to, you know, these specific resources alone. Or you can mandate to say, in order to connect, you have to put an agent on the device, and then the agent again can do the deeper review to say, do you have current AV and or EDR? Do you, are you fully patched so you meet a level of security before you're allowed to gain any access? You know, so there's, you can do an auto enrollment style thing in those other areas too. So there's a number of ways to kind of solve for that. The other side is just to have, you know, again, kind of the guest network and those other sides to say the corporate network is for corporate owned devices. The guest gives you guest, and then you could have different tiers to say there is a BYOD, which gives you certain other criteria. So, but you can create those criterias to allow for the proper segmentation, to put the devices in the proper security zones that you need. And then again, ultimately have the awareness to know what's come on the network and what is on the network, and give you that visibility, which again sounds simple, like you alluded to, why wouldn't everybody do it? But it can be very difficult to get that level of visibility from the sides, just with the pure number of devices you have, because your firewalls and those things don't necessarily show it. They can show the number of connections and devices and those other things, but not going to give you a clean view of where they're coming from and where they exist in your network side of it. And network access controls are purpose built for that. They are, what is access a network? That's what it cares about. And so it does solve for a very, very specific need, but it does it in a very critical way.
I'll go ahead and just, I'm sure we'll talk about which customers need this in a little bit, but I'll just go pick on one, for example, as a school, right? Is most of the times schools, for their wireless, it's just a shared secret, right? Is student Wi-Fi 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. For the faculty Wi-Fi, it's usually faculty 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or, you know, some other secret key. What happens when a student's trouble getting onto the environment, one teacher shares out the faculty or internal network passphrase in order to get on? you know what happens next. If you've been in, working in a school, is that student goes, hey, I was able to get on the trusted faculty Wi-Fi that bypasses all the content filtering. iPhones, I don't know about Android, but iPhones make it super easy to share these passwords these days when you're trying to join the network. And it says, hey, someone else is trying to join the network. Do you just want to share the passphrase? And it just sends it wirelessly right over. Mm-hmm. We hear this all the time in schools is I now have 50 some devices on my internal network for all these students. And I have no idea how, but I had to change the password again. What you could do is just say, take off all the mobile devices on this environment, unless approved.
Yeah. I mean, you could actually put the, you know, the teachers as tagged as trusted devices and anything that doesn't have that tag or those sites is not allowed to join. Even if they get the password, they won't get on. While they get authenticated network, it's still, it's good. The network acts will just kick them right back off. So that's the beauty of that. So it kind of, it mitigates that whole problem of saying, well, people is always the wild card, always is the wild card is going to be people side of this. And this protects against that side of it. So no matter what the intentions, you could solve for that problem.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to fit it in, and I'm just going to go for it because I couldn't really find an easy place to do it. It was really where you're going with the NAC solutions or network access controls is you're really building a lot of your policies. And when you think about policies, traditionally, those are usually written. But for security, there is also the technical controls that are also used in policies. And so Kyle kind of touched on this, and so did Nate, where you can get very granular when it comes to these types of tools. You have the ability to say, what is my security posture of a device, of my individuals? You can get granular on time, too. So if you wanted certain people to have access to the network only at a specific time, you'd mention bring your own devices. They only get this type of access, et cetera, et cetera. So each one of those are their own types of policies. And the more granular you get with the policy, the better control you have over the network, the access, et cetera. You can eliminate a lot of threats very, very quickly. You can get into role-based access as well, too. So there's a lot here. It is a very powerful tool. But as you can see, as I'm going through this quickly, that adds the complexity of the setup, the configuration, et cetera. Both of Kyle and Nate kind of mentioned this, too, is the way that the tools typically get deployed today is you kind of go into a learning mode, if you will, as you get that overview of what does it look like, and then you can start to implement your policies to start to make it a much more controlled environment after that.
For sure. I mean, it sounds very like customizable, which is so interesting and so useful. We talked a little bit about the security benefits, and we talked a little bit about how it fits in this zero trust. Are there any other benefits to this network access control? Are there any like compliance? You mentioned policies and things like that. How does this really benefit businesses?
Yeah, I'll just touch on the compliance portion a little bit. There's a lot of different features, but inventory and control hardware assets falls into various requirements, such as, you know, PCI, HIPAA, NIST. So those are three big names out there that covers quite a wide range. So again, banking, they just moved all over to the NIST standards, right? And so that's a pretty big one. But basically, can you identify and can you control? So if you've been around the CIT's podcast at all, we've always been communicating the NIST cybersecurity framework, taking that a little bit further at times into the cyber defense matrix. But what we're trying to do is help organizations shift into more of that proactive, you know, pre-security incident, that identify and protect. This is where that NAC sits, is we are trying to identify the devices currently on the network or trying to connect to the network and protecting the network connections themselves, because those are both pre-security incident. Now, if you ever have a, you know, device that's connected afterwards, that's post-security incident, right? There is an unauthorized device in our environment. So having some type of, you know, network access solutions, or just even being able to just control the hardware assets in your environment, it is a widespread across the compliance spectrum.
Yeah, and how it fits into the zero trust thing, I know you just kind of asked that out there as well, but this is a great tool for zero trust. I mean, the concept behind zero trust is I never trust anything and I'm constantly verifying. That's exactly what these tools do. I'm verifying a lot of different things, as we kind of highlighted the different controls and policies that are out there, but it is a core component of what's going on with the zero trust world.
Yeah, wasn't it, I think, Todd, you mentioned, Jeremy, that we're starting to see some of these show up even on the cyber insurance renewals. Is that correct? That they're you know, good for good reason. I mean, for risk mm-hmm. reduction side of it, this is a significant risk reducer, and that's what our insurance companies are about. So no surprise. That's
yeah. We just tying into the insurance conversation, we don't typically see them as flat out denials on your cyber mm-hmm. insurance. They're still dealing with multi-factor, you know, and EDRs and everything like that. But we are seeing them being asked about because they potentially impact the premiums.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I can't help myself. I have to talk about it. If you think the way that insurance works is they're trying to reduce their risk. In the mm-hmm. cybersecurity world, we're doing the same thing, as we're trying to minimize the risk to organizations, and we're kind of looking at it from a different lens, but we're both trying to do the same thing. So when we're making recommendations and making awareness about tools like this, it's because on the back end, the people that are giving you the insurance are trying to limit their risk and saying, I'll give you X amount of coverage, but it's going to cost you mm-hmm. more because your risk is much higher.
Right. Do you think this network access control will ever get to the point of to the level of MFA in that you need it? You have to do it, or because of the challenges in implementation and the lift, it's just never going to get to that level. Does that question make sense?
Yeah. I don't know if it'll ever fully get to that level, just because every network is also completely different, right? Yeah. These focus heavily on networks that are on-premise, right? Mm-hmm. The switches, sure. The firewalls, the access points. There are businesses out there that don't have networks, right? They're mm-hmm. all fully remote. They're operating in the cloud, everything like that. Maybe there is no critical infrastructure on-prem anymore. It's mainly just there for internet connections out to the internet. So that's why I don't really think mm-hmm. I don't fully get there. But if you are running on-prem critical infrastructure, you got to be at least considering this type of stuff. I'll just go pick on one more. I came from a manufacturing background. I know Todd has as well, but when it comes to manufacturing, your business literally runs on the automation systems, the PLC controllers, everything like that. You have critical networks that need to be isolated from the rest of the environment. And to put on top of that, go listen to the last podcast about end-of-life software. They're typically mm-hmm. running the most legacy software of most of the market space. So you have vulnerable devices connected to the internet, running the business that makes you millions and millions of dollars. That's a very touchy network that needs to be protected. And so, and then oftentimes we have different devices that don't really need to talk to each other, but need to be on the same network. And, you know, and one of the challenges with the manufacturing space is you say, okay, yeah, let's go do some type of network segmentation to bring it off. Well, now we're talking about potential downtime of re-architecting the network layout and, you know, different VLANs. You can put these network access tools in place to say, we'll leave the existing IT infrastructure the way it is today. We don't need to bring down the network, but we can still configure micro segmentation to say, you know, the laser system here can talk to the computer over here that's monitoring measurements, which is different than the one that's running the water barrel sensors, right? And so you can build those really granular controls and protect a very critical piece of the environment. So it's pretty powerful on how you can really lock down very sensitive networks and ones that are often the most prone to want to implement security controls.
Yep.
Yeah. So I was going to say, to summarize that real briefly, is I think you're going to see the adoption heavily coming up. I do think the tools are getting much more robust. They're getting simpler to use, but there are certain situations where it does not apply. So like Nate mentioned, a heavily cloud-based customer wouldn't typically need the network access control itself because they're doing it differently. Those are kind of almost inherently building that segmentation just because you're using different apps. Your Office 365 is different from your Salesforce, which is different from your AWS, et cetera. So those inherently have that built into the way that their network is built. So it doesn't have it quite there. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think you're seeing the requirement. The fact that it's showing up on an insurance is going to mean that you're going to see the adoption increase significantly.
Yep. I think that's well stated. I mean, I think they both covered it through. I think the when you look at the ability to just apply to general businesses side of it, it's going to come. I mean, and I think the simplification side of it is going to help draw that towards it. I mean, the cost barrier has always been, the cost and complexities have been the biggest hindrance to getting this out there in a wider audience side of it. And we're seeing that shift, and I think that's a significant change side of it, and that's coming along with regulatory change. So mm-hmm. So it'd be a high percent, but yeah, I think they both stated well, it will not be, you're never going to be 100%.
Sure. Well, as we kind of get to the end here, if there's anything else you'd like to share, we talked a lot about the first step, of course, is assessment. We always say that, but what is the next step in this journey for someone who is just starting, done their assessment, know what they have, then what do they do?
Flip the switch.
Have some fun. So, yeah, there you go.
I was gonna say, so remember the conversation about bringing down the network inadvertently? Todd's not the engineer you want. The way selfish I learned, plug, talk to CIT.
The way I learned was if I broke it, I gotta fix it. So
yeah.
Talk to CIT and we'll get any engineer other than Todd on that project.
I was going to say, turn it on at 5 o'clock on a Friday and then go home for a long weekend. And then
you've learned from me. So
yeah. See what you got on Monday.
Yeah. Or go on vacation the following week. Yeah. And turn it on.
That's even better.
To actually answer your question, I'd say once you know what you have and where you want to be, you know, again, talk to CIT. We can talk about the different example deployments and how, what they can look like. There's quite a few different deployments out there. I won't get technical here, but there are options and there's different use cases of when you'd want one versus the other.
I'll just briefly kind of give a little bit more information. I mean, the answer is you'll pick whatever is critical for your systems and you'll start to decide how you want to separate that, right? So Nate mentioned this very quickly when he was talking about schools, but again, you can apply it to anything. If you're a bank, you're going to keep your core banking separate from the public, et cetera. So once you've got the idea of what it is, you can start to build the security policies around it and you start to build what that looks like. And then in my opinion, I try to start small and do your quick tests, because when you do have an issue, you'd like it to have as small of an impact as possible, and then you can start to grow from there.
Definitely. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. I know we're going to have a podcast deep diving in the future to talk a little bit more about all of the things we alluded to, the segmentation, difference across industries, but thanks so much, Kyle, Todd, and Nate, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.